Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast for Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod, Facebook and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's never been more jealous of a listener, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Shout out to good friend of the podcast, David Kwan, who sent a picture from New Orleans, where I've never not wanted to be in New Orleans, before the national championship game. He happened to run into one Chris Beard outside of his hotel. Coach Beard, never turning down a fan, lovingly took a photo with both David and his son, Nate. So shout out to the Kwan family, Chris Beard, and being in New Orleans, all things that I love.
It was really a triple stack of things that Kyle was jealous of, and so I really wanted to put his misery and his pain out there on the internet. But we're not here to talk about misery and pain for Kyle. We're here to talk about misery and pain for some folks north of the Red River. Texas beats OU in the weekend series, taking in dramatic fashion that Sunday rubber match to win the weekend series. We'll down the 40, we'll burn orange lenses, we'll bang the drum, Godzilla Tron, all of those fun things that we always do. But let's start with some fun and not so much fun on the diamond. So Texas had to go up to Arlington to take on OU for various reasons, but came out Friday and looked like the Texas of, I don't know, 45 days ago, and just put it on OU 7-1. Pete Hansen looked like the Pete Hansen that we expected him to be all year, unlike the Pete Hansen we saw last weekend. But Big 12 pitcher of the week performance from him on Friday night. Saturday didn't go quite as well, and then Sunday looked to be even worse, but Texas battled back, scoring 11 unanswered runs to roar back from a 7-1 deficit to win that one 12-8. A big weekend for Texas. And hopefully this is a momentum builder. The back half of this schedule is easier than the front half of the schedule. So hopefully this is where Texas turns the corner and looks like the Texas we expected them to be heading into the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're about at the midway point. You could quibble a little bit with that. You know, we're 30 games in.
Halfway-ish.
Yeah, it's if you go all the way to the championship in Omaha, it's somewhere between like 67 and 70 games, depending if you have to play a couple extra games or not. So not quite halfway, maybe, but certainly halfway of the regular season, or a little bit over. But yeah, so you have enough of a sample size that you can look at the season. The Big 12 is good this year, so there are still some good games on the horizon, but I think this was an interesting one, right? This is their second Big 12 series. They lost their first one, where they just had heartbreaking losses in the first two games to Tech. They won the first game in this one, and then kind of had a late, tough heartbreaker in the Saturday game, and in both cases showed out on Sunday, which I think shows some fight. This one really if you lose your first two series in the Big 12 to OU and Tech, you know, first of all, Twitter will be unbearable. But it changed a little bit of the narrative of the season, getting that Sunday win, getting that series win, coming back, fighting hard. It showed some Texas fight. It was, all in all, I think a really good weekend. They just beat what I believe is an underrated, I hate to say that out loud, OU team. I think they're RPI number 20 in the nation. So, I mean, they legitimately should be a ranked team who's not a regional host, but on the outside, looking in kind of on that group. So they are very good. And they went to a neutral site and beat them, you know, 2 out of 3 and showed a lot of good things and a lot of progress in it. So all in all, I think a good weekend. Pete Hansen, like you said, pitcher of the week, Big 12 pitcher of the week, did his thing. Tristan Stevens did his. The Sunday starter, kind of the inverse of last weekend when both starters struggled a bit. And Lucas Gordon wobbled a little bit, and we had some of the similar bullpen issues that we've seen flare up. But, I mean, all in all, I think the way that they did it on Sunday, the comeback, the fight, leaves a much different taste in the mouth, especially we won't talk about the weekday game. But if they would have lost to both Texas A&M in the weekday game and then lost to Oklahoma in the weekend series, we'd be looking at a much different kind of place. We'd be taking much different stock for this team. They probably, instead of moving up in the rankings to number 7, might have dropped down to number 20. You know, it did matter that they fought back the way they fought back generally, but the way they did, down 7-1 and then winning 12-8. You know, that they just absolutely and it goes to show you, Gerald, I think more than anything, if you remember the Texas Tech football horns down that led to like a 28 point comeback. Similarly, in this one, you had an OU baseball horns down that led immediately to 11 straight runs for the Longhorns. So I will say it to all of the fans, probably the players of other programs who listen to this, because I know they think about Texas all day long. Keep doing the horns down. It nurtures our soul. It's the greatest thing you can do. It obviously causes our players to go on delirious runs where they hold you from scoring and score themselves. I love it. I love that exact thing. Keep doing that. It's great for us.
We're not the ones to get offended by the horns down, Kyle. You and I are not those dudes. I think I've told this story before and I mentioned it on Twitter, but like, I learned at a young age, thanks to Gerald Goodridge Sr., like, don't get mad because the other team's celebrating. Do your job and they won't celebrate. And that's like this, I think, the mindset that Texas baseball had on Sunday. This is a team that I think, we talked about it last week, really struggled a bit between the ears. They seem to not be, especially on the mound, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But like, this is a Texas team that I think needed to prove to itself that it could battle back, and it wasn't the team to give up the leads. It was the team that would force you to give up a lead. And so I think that for Texas is bigger than anything. And we joked about it last week. 12 runs, enough to win a baseball game, come to find out, especially when 11 of those come without an answer from the other team. And so that, to me, again, the bats can support the bullpen as it gets it figured out, because really, you've mentioned it, and I think it's a great way of viewing it, there are two seasons in collegiate baseball. Really, three seasons. You have your non-conference, you have your conference season, and then you have the postseason. And I think, as much as it sounds like, I'm not saying punt on Big 12 play in the conference play, because I still think Texas has a chance to win the conference title, and I think that's a very fair expectation to hold. But what I'm saying is Texas wants to get the bullpen figured out because they want to dogpile in Omaha. And so some of that is still going to be growing pains as we see Texas try to figure out how and who in the bullpen can be the guys. And that, to me, is the biggest question that continues, because you're not going to be able to score 12 every outing. You're not. You're just not. Now, thankfully, most Sunday starters will give you a couple of runs, and Texas's bats are able to take advantage of even the smallest and slightest weakness that a pitcher shows, but you don't want to have to rely on your offense to get you out of a 7-run hole.
And maybe that's a good segue, Gerald, to talk about where we're at and how much we've relied on the offense. Again, 30 games in, it's time for a health check, midpointish health check. Texas currently sitting at 21-9 through 30 games. They're number 8 or number 7, depending on which poll. They currently number 5 in RPI, which probably is what matters. Number 10 overall strength of schedule. And something that if you're just watching Texas, or maybe you're not a super big baseball fan and you knew they were number 1 and you wondered what's going on, or you're a casual fan or a fan of another team, and you say, man, what happened with Texas? They've dropped a little bit. Well, 60%, 18 total, of their games have been played away from home, including 16 of the past 22. They've been on the road a lot. And if you look at what's coming up, this is why Gerald said the schedule definitely looks a little easier and shakes out favorably. 19 of the remaining 26 in the regular season are at home. And Texas has been superlative under Pierce at the dish. I mean, they just don't lose hardly ever at home. They don't lose many series at all, but they certainly don't lose many games generally at the dish. So that is a good sign for things to come. They play still a really good Oklahoma State team and a pretty good TCU team coming up at home. So they have some tough games, but they're in a place where I think they can go up from here. And there are some positive signs. I'm going to start with those bats where Gerald talked about bats can't win you every game, but they definitely have won a majority of the 21 games. They are crushing the ball right now. They lead the Big 12 in both categories with a .318 batting average and 47 home runs. They are not singular. There are multiple guys crushing it, but there are two players right now for Texas hitting that are All-American caliber. I mean, Golden Spikes caliber, like Player of the Year caliber. And I'm going to start with the one that may not be as much of a household name. Again, if you're not paying close attention to baseball, is Murphy Staley. Murph Dog leads the nation in hits. He's like a decimal point away from leading batting average. He has 13 doubles, a triple, and 8 home runs. He's had a hit in all but 2 games and has 18 games with multiple hits. Now, he is... If any player has him, he's your guy. But don't forget, he's the reason, I say, that's opened up the next guy who I'm going to talk about, the other All-American candidate player, to do what he's done, because pitchers can't miss him. So Murphy Staley not only has had the stats, but he's had the protection of Ivan Melendez, who, oh, by the way, was just named the National Player of the Month. Not Big 12, nothing. The National Player of the Month for March.
We talked about it before the season, that if the guys on either side of Ivan Melendez could put together even a slight banger of a season, for lack of a better term, and give him some protection, then Ivan Melendez would make himself some money and make Texas some wins. And that's exactly what he's done. I mean, he is top 10 in multiple statistical categories. He's second in home runs, second in total bases, sixth in slugging, eighth in RBI, and eighth in walks, right? All of that, and they're walking him more than 92%-ish of the rest of the company. And so that, to me, is so telling of how solid this lineup is. You can't really, you know, you think back to like Barry Bonds, right? That's a bad example based upon how you feel about Barry Bonds. I think Barry Bonds is, regardless of juicing, one of the best baseball players to ever walk the planet. And you can't leave some juicers out of the Hall of Fame and putting other juicers in. But anywho, that's not the conversation we're having. The conversation we are having, cough, cough, Roger Clemens, cough, cough, is that pitchers can't pick their poison. In this lineup, you usually have a pitcher that's like, I'm going to pitch this guy, I'm going to walk this guy, I'm going to give this guy no hittable pitches, and this is the guy I'm going to pitch to. And this lineup is not letting you do that. Trey Faltini, who's, again, a guy who we didn't really expect to be kind of a masher, has been a bit of a masher this season, and it's turning out for Texas. You know, he's had a couple of bad spots and bad individual at-bats, but I think overall, it's hard to be upset with what Trey Faltini is bringing to the lineup, because we really just expected him to hold it down with the glove.
Yeah, you looked at two guys coming in, and we said it in our preview, that if you get anything out of the bats of Faltini and Ardoin, you consider it a win, because Ardoin's one of, if not the singular best defensive catcher in the country. And Faltini last year and coming into this year was viewed as probably the best defensive shortstop prospect, big league prospect at shortstop in the country. And he has been great, leading the Big 12 with 87 assists, 962 fielding. He's been great on that end, as you'd expect. But he also is 24th in the nation with 10 home runs. I mean, he, like you said, has struck out a lot, but I think he's just swinging harder, swinging more, because they need that from him at that point in the order. He's been able to get some rallies. They've had a lot of 7, 8, 9 rallies in games where that's where they really got the offense going. And it's because they have some bats lower down in the order. Cause like you said, there's sluggers and dangers all the way through it. Ardoin is along with, we mentioned him, Staley and also Doug Hodo, top 30 in the country in doubles. I mean, he's hitting more home runs. He's in conference play over 300 batting average. I mean, it's those two guys you don't expect, and getting that is just Lanyap. But then you look at another guy. We talked about Murph Dog. We talked about Melendez, who again, just nuts in the month of March. Another guy, the third, and I just put this together as I'm saying it out loud, Triple M here, Murph, Melendez, and Messenger. He's hitting over 400 in his last 12 games. He's hitting 480. In conference, Skylar Messenger has been great defensively at third, and he, being the Kansas guy, you know, loves Big 12 pitchers, I guess, because in the conference and kind of just lately in this point of the season, he's heating up. But he's not the only guy. I think Mitchell Daly, who has probably gotten the majority of the ire from fans this year, is finally coming on. 10 of his 25 hits this season have all come this past week. Okay, great. And also his only home run of the season. And then Campbell, who's probably the other guy who people expected more from, who hasn't been able to deliver. He's younger, but maybe people thought this would be the breakout year. I remember saying that on my preview. They've had 3 home runs this season. All of them came in the past week. So they're all coming on when the guys who aren't just the guy, Melendez admittedly didn't have the best series. He had a really key RBI against OU, but he didn't have what he'd been having. He was a little bit down. I think that's just a one-off. But other guys stepped up. Messenger, Daly, Campbell. I mean, those aren't the names. Ardoin. Those aren't the names you're used to necessarily seeing. But I think those guys getting hotter as we head into Big 12. And again, we'll talk about the pitching next. If we can get things right at the right part of the season, if guys are swinging the bat and are hot at the right part of the season, this team has the talent to go all the way.
Yeah, and I think we talk about this point in the season. It has to be said that, you know, Texas is number 10 in the country in strength of schedule, and 60% of those games have been away from home. And right, so, right. Like, there's part of that is, like, Texas Tech last weekend is a very hitter-friendly ballpark, so those maybe are a little different in Austin. But again, if my aunt had wheel or my grandma had wheel, she'd be a bicycle, right? We can't play that game. But the second half of the season, 19 of the last 26 games will be in Austin, so we'll see how that works out. But we've got to talk about the other side of the diamond, or the other side of the mound as well. Texas playing relatively good from the field. Only 15 errors this year. Silas Ardoin, like you mentioned, thrown out 17 people stealing. Like, why? Like, that's a wasted out at this point. Like, why does a coach even call for the steal? Why? Like, you know, going in, you're going to get caught. Like, that is just not going well. And we think about the pitching. That's really been, you know, we joked about it last week. It seems like Tanner Witt's UCL is holding together the entire pitching staff, and specifically this bullpen. And it feels like guys went from feeling like they were the biggest, baddest one in the ballpark walking on the mound, which is more important than even the stuff you've got throwing, but just what's between the ears. It feels like something has changed. And like Aaron Nixon, for a perfect example, is a guy who last year felt unbeatable and untouchable in some spots. And this year he has felt like he doesn't know even how to put the ball between and over the plate. Like, that to me has been the biggest change in the bullpen. It's not the ability of the arms. It's the ability of the minds of that bullpen staff.
Yeah. And the bullpen is where it is. I think the quote you're mentioning was Swindell, Greg Swindell, of course, Longhorn legend, commentator on Longhorn Network and ESPN. Basically said you have bullpen guys throwing 97 who are afraid to throw strikes, and they're falling behind 2-0, 3-1, and they have to throw their heater down the middle. And that's, I mean, that is kind of what we've been saying, what we've been thinking is it's control. It's putting that, locating that fastball, locating that first, getting ahead in pitchers counts. And that's why you've seen an uptick in walks and home runs. That's what they need to work on. Texas giving up 4 grand slams this year. They've given up, Pete Hansen, we talked about, has given up more home runs this year than his whole career. And he is certainly not the only one. Again, hitter friendly park, sure, but they've also played in 2 major league parks. You know, it kind of balances a bit. But you know, Nixon is kind of the perfect template for the bullpen issues. he's blowing by guys with his slider. When he can get ahead and count, he's still striking out 1.2 guys per inning. He's pitching. He's still getting guys to whiff, but he's making it hard for himself. Almost every inning he's going out and walking one, if not two guys, and putting himself in a bit of a pickle. And, you know, he has only had three outings, I believe, this season where he hasn't had a walk. You know, that's tough, because he was so efficient and lights out with his pitches last year. You just knew you could put him in any spot in any jam and he could locate and mow guys down. And I don't know if the combination of Witt not being in the bullpen and moving him out and then Nixon struggling a little bit has just really set it off. But this is why they were preseason number one. This is why all the people who know anything about college baseball were saying this team will be so good because of their pitching. Three solid starters, you know, three Friday guys, and then a bullpen with 12 guys with major league stuff, you know, 15 guys with major league stuff. It's just, and no one who's watched this team, Pierce said it as well, when in the Aggie game, he went out and talked to Southard and didn't pull him. He said, get yourself out of it. He's letting guys go out and work it out and prove it, even when they have mistakes and they struggle, because they're going to need all of those arms in Omaha. They're going to need Duplantier to get it going. They're going to need Southard. They're going to need Eckert to have some stuff. They're going to need, you know, Coy Cobb, who's come on here lately, not a name we expected at the top, but who's come on and been pretty good. You know, they're going to need Staley. They're going to need all these guys to be ready. And so you kind of work it out, and again, you hope you get right at the right time, but it really seems like it's just a control issue, and if they can get ahead and count, the stuff that they have is too good to be a 3.55 team ERA. Now, that caveat, all of those things said, that's still the best ERA in the Big 12. So we are absolutely pimpling on a prom queen, picking pimples on the prom queen here. Most teams would kill for the problems that Texas has, but that is Texas. We had number one aspirations. We have Omaha still in sights for this year.
The road to Omaha continues this week. They've got UT Rio Grande Valley in the midweek, so hopefully that one isn't too dicey. And then they're hosting TCU in Austin, who's coming off a bit of a tough week. Hopefully Texas can continue and get its mind right and its arms right in the third weekend series of conference play.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
But now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus, all of the winnings goings on, and we down the 40. The ladies of Red and Charlene McCombs Field finally getting things back to where we thought they would be after a little bit of a touch and go early start to the season. The ladies now rolling, sweeping Iowa State in the weekend series. Friday 7-5, Saturday 11-10 in an eighth inning. Haley Dolcini somehow got a win in that one in spite of blowing the lead in that. It doesn't matter though. And then Sunday 7-2. So a big weekend for the ladies to get back in their winning column.
Yeah, it looked great. They're 6-0, I believe, to start Big 12 play. So they are again hot at the right time after a really big struggle in the beginning, and that Saturday walk off, especially with the Queen Mary walk off home run to come back and complete the comeback. I was watching that, and her quote after the game when they finally got the audio working was, she said, you know, I've had to watch Mackenzie, or she said Mac, but Mackenzie Parker, who's been red hot, get all these game winning hits from the on deck circle. Finally, I got my chance, which is a hilarious way to think of it, right? Like the player who's had multiple walk offs already this year had a player who was just waiting behind her in the on deck circle to do it herself. I love that mentality, for this Longhorn team. And again, a couple players red hot at the right time going into Big 12 play. This is a really good Big 12 conference, so they're going to need all of that, all the bats, all the arms, every run, every hit. I mean, they're going to have to scratch and claw for some runs in a really good softball conference.
I mean, the Big 12 continues to be like the spring sport conference, right? It's I guess winter technically basketball, but baseball and track and swimming and the Big 12 saw, and like, we're just going to be honest with you. We don't expect them to beat OU. We don't expect them to be within 45 runs of OU on some days. The OU baseball team is on a whole nother level. But as far as competing for the rest of the conference, it's absolutely up for grabs for the ladies. So next up for them, they've got UT Arlington before hosting those OU Sooners this weekend. And in that one, let's just be honest, like, gird your loins for potentially a tough softball weekend.
Yeah, OU softball right now is, I don't even know, it's better than Alabama football. It may not be quite on the level of UT swimming, but it's pretty, men's swimming, but it's pretty darn close. Like, they are just so good right now, and they feel like it's a bunch of professionals playing amateurs. They're so good.
I'm pretty sure that they have more run rules than several teams have wins this season. Like, that's how good OU softball is this year. Speaking of doing real good, numbers one, men track and field, and ladies, women's track and field, went to College Station and came out victorious, taking all the cookies from the Aggies. The men won 11 of 19 events to win 105.5 to 96.5. The ladies edged them out. It was like a one event difference, 102 to 100 to get the sweep of the weekend, go in and win the dual meet against the Aggies.
Absolutely. And a couple shout outs, the men's 4x4 clocked a 302.33 to close out the meet. It was the fastest ever in a collegiate dual meet. Jonathan Jones just continues to do amazing things. He's fast at the 400, at the 800, indoor, outdoor. He's one of the fastest humans on the planet right now. So, Gerald, just always wanting to give your island boys a little shine. Trip Preparey just does nothing but win. One of my favorite things was, this was, like you talked about, a really close one for Texas to win on the women's side. And probably if you look at it this way, the difference could be Tyra Gittin setting a personal best and facility record in the high jump, the 6 feet, 4 inches and 75, 4.75 inches. That's right. But let's just note that she set the facility record. That's the Texas A&M record. Tyra Gittins transferred from A&M.
Whoopsies.
And then came to Texas and then set the facility record at A&M, which is just so beautiful. And she, again, those points that she won proved to be the difference in this one. These are, to give them some credit, two of the better track teams in the country. If there's a world where this plays out in the national, you know, championship outdoors, and it's Tyra Gittins who beats A&M again after she transferred, like, oh, that would just be, that would warm the cockles. And especially after watching the commentary, if you watched any of the live or any of the highlights, the Aggie in, like, stadium announcer makes Sean Elliott look, you know, objective, makes, you know, he's just one of the most egregious homers in the 4x1. Texas smoked A&M, and I don't know if he had a bad angle or he didn't realize that turns were a bit deceptive, but Texas was like five lengths ahead, and he kept saying, great handoff by the Aggies. Aggies looking good, pulling ahead here. Ooh, this is a close one, and at no point was it close. I mean, Texas just smoked them, and it just, I don't know, it made me so mad to watch. Aggies are just literally the worst and the most... We have a burnt orange lenses section on here, and it's incredibly sarcastic compared to what they do every morning. The most average Aggie fan waking up with his maroon or her maroon lenses on. They are just so deplorable in every way.
Kyle, I left you Gabrielle Montefalcone in the rundown because I wanted to hear you say that, and I'm disappointed. But she won the 400 with the personal best 49.42.
I believe you mean Gabrielle Montefalcone.
There you go.
You didn't use the Italian fingers gesture, and that's why you couldn't pronounce it.
I did not, because podcasts are definitely a visual medium. Number 11, men's tennis, swept the weekend doubleheader, taking all 7 points from Texas Tech. Normally, you don't play all seven when it's a collegiate level, but you need those tiebreaker points for conference. So 7-0 over Tech, and then 4-0 in the doubleheader over UT Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah, I believe Tech was a ranked team when Texas went in there and just absolutely showed them what's what. All in all, a good week, and they have a really they got some tough stuff still left. The Big 12 is also a very, very good tennis conference this year, like ridiculously deep, and it feels like all the good teams can beat each other. And I don't know, like it's going to be a very interesting conference tournament, a very interesting tournament at the end of the year. So Texas just needs to keep grinding out wins, you know, putting little things in the memory bank and accessing them later, because there's going to be tough stuff still on the schedule, but they are looking good.
Speaking of tough stuff, this is probably the toughest conference matchup they've got. Number three in the land, TCU, the head up to Fort Worth to take on those Frogs. Number 12, golf, keeping it country club. Got the first win of the spring season and the first win since the match play championship in the fall at Augusta. It's also their first stroke play win since May of last year, winning in the NCAA regional. So it's amazing what happens when you, I don't know, get your best player back on the links, how successful things can be. Kyle, if you had to guess, what was the last event that Pearson Cootie played for Texas?
I don't know the event. I think it was in October.
It was the match play championship in the fall, the last time Texas won a weekend tournament.
Yeah, look, you know, this, he's been out for a while. Both Cooties were out. We got Parker Cootie, who himself is an elite golfer, back. And I mentioned they were hoping to get him back this weekend. Pearson, no one knew. Is he going to be 100%? What can he do to come back? Parker had a little bit of a rough go coming back from the same injury. So no one knew exactly what was going to happen. In fact, the amateur golf rankings had finally knocked him out of the number one spot. He fell all the way to number two amateur golfer in the world. And I believe Michael Jordan meme, he took that personally, because he just turned around and did the second best ever like round in Longhorn history. He put, or I guess the second best ever 54 hole total in program history. Our boy Bo Hostler was 18 under in 2016, but shot a 17 under, and Oklahoma State's really good. Like, they're number two in the country, and they beat them by 26 strokes, and this is their first time having their full team healthy. So that number 12 next to UT's golf, I'm going to make a deal with all the rest of you. You could pick one or the other. They're either number one or number two, but it's definitely not both, because with both Cooties, they are they're a force to be reckoned with. All four of the golfers in this one were basically, you know, finished in the top 13 individually. They were all multiples under 17, 10, 7, and 5, and they're just a great team effort. And you know, like we said with Tarotti's, Gerald, what's better than one Cootie?
Double Cootie.
That's right. That's right.
That's better than one Cootie is two Cooties. Double Cootie action for Texas. They'll be off for a couple weeks before they're back on the links.
All right, Gerald, now let's do our best Aggie impression. No, I will not. I will not sully this segment. We will do our best Longhorn fan impression and put on the burnt orange lenses and take a look at the world through such lenses. Gerald, the interesting, exciting kind of, especially for you and I who observe Texas athletics from a certain standpoint, one of the more interesting stories of the week was the new NIL portal, if you will, the partnership with Open Doors launching a site basically listing every UT athlete across all the sports, and having a direct, almost like, you remember the Cameo where you could book people, kind of direct to user, user to user booking experience for NIL opportunities, which I think is just incredible.
You asked if I remember Cameo. It's been like 3 years running that I almost paid Vince Young to say mean things to you on your birthday. Like, that's just really where I was at. But no, like, I spent way too much time today looking at this portal, and like, I was texting you people that we could get to do a podcast appearance for, like, I don't know, our monthly Starbucks budget or something. I don't know what your Starbucks budget looks like, but mine is unfortunately robust. It's just so cool that it's like, hey, what kind of athlete do you want? What price point do you want? What, like, you can search for specific people. And I'm still pretty upset that because international student athletes are considered international students, they can't, because the way that M1 visas work, you can't do off-campus work for things that aren't related to your chosen career field. So, like, there might be a loophole for maybe like an advertising major if that was it, but I don't want to test that and ruin someone's eligibility. But like, I it's just cool to be able to go on there and be like, let me get a tennis player for like $40, right? Like this is just such a cool opportunity. And Texas continues to kind of set the charge and set the, after lagging behind for a while, Texas is now kind of at the bleeding edge of what NIL can be.
You know, in politics, you call it down ballot, right? Like you have your presidential candidate at the top of the ballot that gets people in, and we'll call that Bijan, I guess. Andrew Jones, whoever the most popular Longhorn on campus is, and that's another debate for another podcast, maybe an interesting one. But it's interesting to look down, and there's some absolute monsters, legends, all Americans, you know. Rush or Mount Rushmore quality competitors in their respective sports. You can get, you know, one of the best soccer players in the world, like literally in the world, in Lexi Massimo, who's soon to be like captain of the U.S. WNT. Like you could get incredible tennis players, Peyton Stearns, you know, Sia Moldiab, Tripp Pipiri. I mean, we talk about on this podcast a lot. You know, you could get Mary Iacopo or Lauren Burke or Mackenzie Parker or any of these softball players. You know, we talk about a lot of these athletes because we think that sometimes it doesn't get the shine necessarily, the trickle-down shine, if you will, to keep the politics theme running, for some of the other sports. But we have incredible athletes. That's how you win a Director's Cup, with all Americans, with legends, with future pros, you know, in these sports all across, and it's a cool thing. And it's I hope that it is successful for men, women, football, basketball, rowing, every sport on campus, that this impacts top to bottom, all the way across the board. I think this is a cool thing and ultimately going to be a great thing.
The aforementioned Pearson Cootie, $25 for an Instagram post, TikTok post, or podcast appearance. I'm just saying, looked it up right now live. It was that easy. While Kyle was talking, I pulled up the Open Doors app and typed in Cootie. You can get both. You can get double Cootie action for $50. That's all it takes, $50 to get both of them on a podcast.
Yeah, maybe coming to you soon. We'll see. Jared, let's keep it moving. Some other guys who you can get for, you know, $0, because that's how it works.
Air quotes, $0.
Future NIL dollars. Priority linebacker target Samaje Burrell commits to Texas over the weekend, and then goes absolutely viral with his backflip in front of the all gas sign. Gerald, how stoked are you specifically for this kid?
I mean, he's a kid that, you know, had all the right offers. It's like 3-star, but like you watch the tape and you look at the offers and see the people that wanted him, and he's absolutely a priority guy. OU, Oklahoma State, he had an Ohio State offer on the board that he was seriously considering. But like, he's the guy that if you want to earmark a kid for like the burnt orange media conspiracy tinfoil hat posts on TexAggs, he's like easy money. Like he's minus 100 to be the guy that Aggies point out, because he's going to get a ratings bump at the end of the year. He's going to be a 4-star, probably a decent 4-star. He sits outside, I think, of the top 300 on 247. I think ESPN just updated theirs, and he's just inside the 300, and even ESPN sucks at recruiting kids outside of like their 5-stars. So like they even recognize that he's pretty solid. So that's a guy to watch. I'm excited, athletic, and the state of Texas doesn't produce many inside linebackers. And so there's only, I think I did the math, there's like four or five inside linebackers in the state of Texas for the class of 2023. And so that represents 20% of the linebacker production in the state of Texas. So you got to have him, obviously Hill at the top of the board, and Texas is still in the hunt for him. But getting Burrell is a big win for Texas.
Yeah, I love that. And again, I would think your number is even smaller if you look at those recruits who can also do backflips on demand. So very, very cool. I'm an easy sucker sell for
impact, by the way. Impact.
That's right. That's right. For a bit of athleticism. And I also watch Netflix documentary Cheer. And so I imagine that the Texas Palm squad or the mixed, I guess, men and women squad will be, you know, just giving them some shouts. If you can tumble like that, you know, you could have a dual career. Anyways, onto guys who will not be or a player who will not be on the 40 acres going forward. Courtney Ramey put an Instagram post thanking 40 acres, Longhorn fans, Longhorn Nation coaches, everyone. And it seemed like going out on a good note. His announcement that he will both be entering the transfer portal as well as doing the kind of half step into the NBA draft process to understand his grade there, I imagine likely will transfer. He is officially in that portal. So we'll look at where he ends up. He'll be an interesting case because I've heard some reports that he might be more interested in being a ball handler, which I think a more interesting landing spot would be a really good team that needs a lockdown defender where he gets noticed on a deep NCAA tournament run, right? If you're on that Tar Heels team that's playing in the championship and you're locking down Ochai Agbaji, which Courtney Ramey did, but you do it on that stage, you might get noticed, but it'll be curious where he goes and what that says about what he wants to do and thinks he still has to prove to play at the next level. But we know he has all the heart and drive of a true competitor, played some solid years on the 40 acres, and he'll be watching his career closely because I believe he will be a grad transfer in the portal using his COVID year.
He's a guy that I think got really maligned for his lack of offense this year, but he was an absolute snub and travesty that he was not on the all defense team. Like, I don't know what else, like, unless he actively murdered Ochai Agbaji, like, on the court, like, there's nothing more he could have done to keep that guy from having to shut that guy down offensively. And so I'm sad to see Courtney Ramey go. I know there are people that disagree with me on that because his offense, I mean, he took a step back, but I think it's much like a lot of guys who really are top defensive players. Like, you spend all of your energy chasing somebody and locking somebody down on one side of the court, something's got to give.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll keep an eye on him and his career, but a Longhorn we will absolutely be watching his career as it unfolds on the 40 acres is Dylan Mitchell. Dylan Mitchell, who's now, I believe, I think it's On Three just updated their rankings and put him as the number two recruit in the nation. ESPN has him as number seven. A top five caliber recruit, top 10 at least in Dylan Mitchell, and I think even underrated there, has proven that he's bringing a lot. We talked about him last week with the McDonald's All-American game and the dunk contest and what he brings athletically. I think the thing that you saw this week in his last high school game repeatedly is that athleticism, but how he uses it. Dylan Mitchell might be the best defender, and I said this last week, might be the best defender in this class as well. All the things he can do offensively and with his athleticism in transition and on the boards, he might be the best defender in this class as well, which I think is incredible. And, that seemed to have paid off for him as he led Montverde to a national championship.
Hopefully he can help lead Texas to a conference championship. We'll start there. I'm not going to say national championship because North Carolina is absolutely murdering Kansas currently. So we'll just start with a conference championship. We don't want to get the expectations too outsized for the young kid.
Gerald, I'll leave one thing there. Mitchell did have 17 points, 12 rebounds. But when you talk about North Carolina murdering Kansas, North Carolina got hot at the right time. We've talked about that with Texas teams in general in the postseason in college when there's tournament play. But Kansas also, if Texas got their draw, I think would have been like an elite eight team. I think the hardest team that Kansas played in this entire time outside of North Carolina was Providence, who Ken Pom had at like number 38, I think 37, somewhere around there, and that was the best. Most of the teams they played were well lower than that. So if Texas got that draw, who knows? A lot of times it is the luck of the draw, and it is being hot at the right time. So we'll think about that as we think about some of the other sports. And then finally, we'll close out the burnt orange lenses. We talked a lot of golf today, but we'll wrap it up with one more golf. Three Longhorns finishing in the top 20 of the pre-Masters tournament. They played two tournaments in Texas immediately before the Masters, one of which was the Dell Match Play, and now they had the Valero Texas Open this past weekend. Bo Hostler and Dylan Fratelli both looked like they might win. Hostler ended up finishing fourth, Fratelli tied for eighth, but Jonathan Vegas as well, 18th, so three top 20 finishes, the hottest golfer in the world, new number one. Scottie Scheffler did not play in this one, but it'll be interesting if any of those Longhorns, when you in your Masters Calcutta pool and you're looking at the odds where they sit, but I bet Scheffler is top five, top six these days. Gerald, Let's move it on to Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
So this was a very nerdy week for me. Most of you know that I'm a big comic book and Marvel guy. And so Moon Knight, the show starring the incredibly handsome, incredibly talented Oscar Isaac, came out on Disney Plus, and so my wife and I watched that together. Very, very good. Oscar Isaac, again, continues to be just an incredible actor, and it's great to see him continue to show some love to the genre stuff. But that gave me the itch to go back and read some Moon Knight comics. One of my favorite runs of any comic. It's a short, short run, but Warren Ellis relaunched Moon Knight in like 2014, and the art is just beautiful, and the writing is like one of my biggest issues with modern comics is like there's too much just words on the page and verbose. And Warren Ellis does this beautiful thing of like he writes the comics in the way that they should be, where it's very succinct and to the point, and you let the visuals tell the story. And so it's like six issues. If you've got a Microsoft Game Pass Unlimited membership, you get 3 free months of Marvel Unlimited currently right now. It's a deal going on. So like if you're interested in that kind of thing, check it out. It's completely free, but it's the Moon Knight run from like 2014 or 2016, Warren Ellis wrote. It's really, really good.
I've just never been a comic book guy, but I feel like I could be talked into trying it. I have stagnated a little bit with my own book reading, so maybe I need something else to jog my brain here. I've been just swamped at work, and the idea of reading something has not after hours has not been the most exciting. But maybe I need a comic book to jumpstart that. Gerald, maybe you can help me with that one. What I did do this weekend was a ton of assembly. My wife basically redid our living room. And so I had like six pieces to fully assemble, two chairs, two shelves, a new console, a new, what do you call it? Coffee table. So it was a week of sitting in the living room, on the living room floor with the TV on in the background, and I just needed something that I didn't need to focus on. So my number one show, and I'm always curious where people go on this, what your number one, I just need to fold laundry, I just need to do something and have mindless TV on in the background show is, and this is almost a disservice because this show is way too good for that, but I threw Parks and Rec back on because I think it is one of the best comedies ever made. I've seen it many times, so I don't have to think about it, and I will just catch, you know, a Greg Pakaitis reference and bust out laughing, but I don't have to have watched, you know, the 10 minutes leading up to that with any serious intent. But it is dangerous because there will go on some all-time riffs and you'll get distracted from your task at hand. But so I watched a lot of Parks and Rec while I spent like 15 hours assembling things. And it was great and fantastic. The only newest show that I watched, and I know I had big claims for this week, maybe push it back a week, but was Formula One, was it Drive to Survive? My wife is obsessed with that show. She finally watched the fourth season. She's been waiting. So when she watches something, it always ends up that I catch about 2/3 of it. So I watched, have no interest in Formula One, no interest in cars or racing or anything, but I caught a good chunk of it because it's just such gosh darn well done documentary that it pulls you in. It's so interesting. I actually just prefer learning more about the small teams you don't hear anything about, like striving for 1 point, than, you know, Lewis Hamilton versus Verstappen at the top. I like the underdogs in there just to hear about them and interesting, you know, their stories as well. So a great show. Always, I think I've recommended it on this podcast before. I'll recommend it again. The fourth season has been out for a couple weeks. But it's just, it's one of just the most well-done documentaries you'll ever see.
A good documentary will get you to watch pretty much anything. One of my favorite documentaries of all time is about crumping from LA. It's called Rise. It's incredible. Good documentary will get you to learn more about anything than you ever thought. But now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I went back and forth here because the performance, the Manning cast performance of and that's a disservice to it, the even better than Manning cast performance, I should say, of Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird for the women's national championship game was just incredible. They were amazing. Just Google it if you missed some of it. I'm sure it's out there. It just elite commentary. But what I actually am gonna bang the drum on is, folks, we're all spoiled. We're fortunate. We live in a time of many of us have have means and you know, we have access and abilities to have Kickstarters and GoFundMes and ways to raise money for those who are struggling and those who need help. And we haven't officially launched it, but it might be something to think about if we as Longhorn fans decide to maybe do something like that. Launch the GoFundMe, launch the Kickstarter, launch the financial help for those who are in dire states and impoverished and in lesser fortunes than us. And of course, I'm talking about the broke boys of Oklahoma. Those broke boys at OU are basically setting up a lemonade stand to try to pay their way to SEC by charging for the spring football game. It's just so sad. In addition, they moved, kind of 11th hour, moved the home series against Texas to the ballpark at Arlington. I imagine there were some financial implications of that. If they weren't such loathsome creatures, you might even feel bad for them. But instead, we just laugh. We just point and say, ha ha, you broke boys. You might beat us at certain things. Who cares? Softball, that's fine. Football lately, great. Okay. I wipe away my tears with dollar bills at the University of Texas. You poor broke boys.
I'm not one for pocket watching. That's not normally my thing. But anytime we get to dunk on OU, it feels good to do it. But you know what? I'm not concerned with the pores because Texas is old money, and it's fine to be old money. But I'm banging the drum this week on name, image, and likeness. And I, Kyle, I'm just tired of seeing these types of stories for name, image, and likeness stories. How dare South Carolina and Orange Theory team up to get lifetime memberships for herself and to get fitness classes and VIP access for all her coaches and teammates. How dare they ruin college sports by finding a way to compensate athletes for the value that they're bringing in for the university and for the organizations that are associated with the university. How dare they? I'm being sarcastic because people at the start of the NIL era said a couple of dumb things: that one, it would ruin college sports, and two, that it would be terrible for women's sports. And I'm going to go ahead and say that neither of those things are true up until this point. Some of those valuable NIL deals outside of like that $8 million, like let's just put aside like the NIL collective stuff because that's not actually name, image, and likeness. It's within the rules, and I love that it's happening, but it's not actually what the NIL deals are. But like seeing, and this, like, this was even egg on Texas's face, but the former walk-on player that caught the game-winning two-point conversion signed a deal with the local Applebee's and got, I don't know, free apps and zerts for the rest of his life or whatever, right? Like, that's the fun, dumb stuff that college athletes can and are doing now because of NIL. And so it's great to see that these opportunities are coming to the men and the women. And some of the more valuable athletes, as far as the true spirit of NIL, have been the ladies. Their Instagram following can get them a ton of play. Go look at the numbers on the NIL site. Like, leave like Jamal Charles and them outside because they're like $1,000-$1,200. But like, look at the actual on-campus athletes, and the ladies have some pretty big numbers next to their names. And so the NIL opportunities for student athletes, I love that. This is like, this is capitalism working as it should, where people are able to capitalize on the work and fruits of their labor in a way that's not exploitative. And so that is, if capitalism is going to be our system, then this is how it should run. Let the people go into the market and peddle their wares, and people like Kyle and I will find people that we can afford and have them come on our podcast and talk about how great we are.
Agree. Also, is it NIL if, is it considered NIL if Hubert Davis never has to buy a drink in Chapel Hill ever again after ending Coach K's career? I don't know. I don't know if that's NIL. I still need to look at the rules. But I think you're right, Gerald. It is fantastic. I love, hopefully, that we see even more and more of, like I mentioned earlier, these female athletes reaping the benefits across all these sports. It's very cool. Get Rory Harmon some cool deals. Get Mary Iacopo some cool deals. Like, let's be the team that national stories are breaking about, with cool stuff coming for our athletes as well. But again, just wanted to throw a little shade at Coach K at any opportunity. So I'm done.
That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Aggies ain't fast. Sooners are broke.